So we left off last time. We already discussed the issue of what was the definition of Bein Hashmashos. Hopefully we have cast a little bit of light upon the darkness, as I might say. And now I want to resume at the bottom of that Beis Amid Beis. Because now all that, aside from it was a good excuse to do the famous Machlokas Rabbeinu Tam, I'll call it a Machlokas Rabbeinu Tam in the Gra, even though it's not the Gra. It's probably the Rambam and the Gaonim and Rashi against Rabbeinu Tam and Ramban and Rashba. Early Chachmei Sfarad and early Chachmei Ashkenaz versus later Chachmei Sfarad and later Chachmei Ashkenaz. As to when Shkia is. When does Bein Hashmashos begin? Rashi Shita, the Gra Shita, is that Bein Hashmashos basically begins right after what we call sunset, and it runs for however amount of time it runs. Is it, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, around the time of the spring equinox, it runs about 13 and a half minutes. It will be longer in other various kinds of times. And Rabbeinu Tam's position was no, that Bein Hashmashos doesn't begin until almost an hour, not quite, after sunset, again, at that time of year, and it runs then for 13 and a half minutes until it finishes at 72 minutes after. So those were the two positions. What we saw in the Gemara and Shabbos, once we were doing that, is that there were three opinions, but let's talk about the two opinions for now, as opposed to when Bein Hashmashos is. Not forgetting about, it starts at Shkia, it's a Machlokas, again, Rabbeinu Tam and the Gemara, what Shkia means, what is Shkia Sachama. But starting with that point, Rabbi Huda's position is the one that it goes for 13 and a half minutes. Rabbi Yose's position is that no, the 13 and a half minutes right after sunset, that's still, whatever, again, whatever, not our sunset, whatever Shkia means, that's still definitely day. Then there's a very quick period right afterwards. Rabbi Yose says, no, that's when Bein Hashmashos is. It's Keheref Ayin, the Inkobriya Yechol Olam and Allah. Nobody can, you can barely even know it. So it may be right after Rabbi Yehuda this time, it may be close to after Rabbi Yehuda this time, but the bottom line for our Gemara is that Rabbi Yehuda's Bein Hashmashos, according to Rabbi Yose, is still day. Still completely day. And once that 13 and a half minutes finishes, again, it's not, some Rishonim assume it's right afterwards. Tosa says that may not be right afterwards, but within 10 minutes, within Kedei Tvila, whatever time it would take to go immerse. So Tosa says it's pretty close. If it's not right up against it, it's pretty close. But what we can say again is that for Rabbi Yehuda, for Rabbi Yose, when it's Rabbi Yehuda's Bein Hashmashos, it's still day. Which means if it's still day, it means Kohanim, if they wanted, could, in fact, go to the mikveh at that time to do Tvila, according to Rabbi Yose. So now the Gemara says the following. On the bottom of Beis Amid Beis, Amar Mar, four lines from the bottom. Now Rabbi Meir had said that the time that you read Kriya Shema is Mishah, you can, if you look back in the Brice for a second, Rabbi Meir said, Mishah Sha Kohanim Tovlim Lecho Betrumasam. From the time that the Kohanim can do Tevila to eat Truma, which means it still has to still be day, you can already read Kriya Shema then according to Rabbi Meir. Now, the Gemara says about that, and then Rabbi Yehuda and the Braisa, and now the Gemara is going to requote it on four lines from the bottom. Amar Mar. Amar Le Rabbi Yehuda says to Rabbi Meir, V'alo Kohanim Mibod Yom Hein Tovim. Kohanim go to the mikveh when it's still actually literally day. He would even say maybe when the sun is shining. Let's assume for the moment like the Gra. That Shkia means what we call sunset. And Bein Hashmashos begins right at sunset and goes for 13 and a half minutes. So that means that the Shah that the Kohanim are Tov L'Mechal B'Trumasam has to be while the sun is still shining. So Rabbi Yehuda says to Rabbi Meir, it's still day. Now what he means by that is that it's not Zman Shchiva. Right? If the sun is shining, it's not Zman Shchiva. And that's when the Kohanim have to go to the mikveh. So the Gemara says, Shapir Ka'amar Le Rabbi Yehuda Rameir. That's a pretty good kasha. How could Rabbi Meir say that the time that you would Kriya Shema is the time that the Kohanim do Tvila? You might say the last time the Kohanim can do Tvila in order to eat Truma, what are you talking about? That's still day. So the Gemara says, no. Rabbi Meir says, Hachi Kamar. This is what Meir would respond. Mi sabristana bein hashmashos didach kamina? No, Rabbi Huda, I'm not working with your bein hashmashos. Ana bein hashmashos to Rabbi Yose kamina. I work with Rabbi Yose's bein hashmashos. To Am Rabbi Yose, bein hashmashos keheref ayin ze nichnas vze yotze v'yev sholam alma. Okay, so the bottom line then, the way as Rashi explains, is that Rabbi Meir is holding like Rabbi Yose. And according to Rabbi Yose, when can the Kohanim still go to the mikveh? Meaning, when is it not yet Bein Hashmashos? Well, from the time the sun sets, for another 13 and a half minutes. It's still, according to Rabbi Yose, Vadayom. So the Kohanim are allowed to go to the mikveh then. Ah, but so then how can you read Kriyat Shema then? The answer is, so if you look in Rashi, the sun has set. The bottom Rashi. Rashi says, Hachi Garsinan, the line after that, Bein HaShemashas to Rabbi Yehuda, is Mahalach Yoser Mechatzimil Lefnei Tzeis HaKochavim, Rabbi Yose Keheref Ayin Lefnei Tzeis HaKochavim. Rabbi Yose is this right before Tzeis HaKochavim. Rabbi Yehuda is much longer. Rabbi Meir Kerabbi Yose Sfirile. Rabbi Meir holds like Rabbi Yose. V'chi Tavam Mikami Hachi Samach Lechashechahu. When you go to the mikveh after sunset, but before Tzeis HaKochavim, it's still day, but Uzman Shechiva Krina Bay, it's dark, and therefore it's called Zman, it's close enough to dark that it's called Zman Shechiva. People go to sleep then. So it's halachically night, or it's halachically, I'm sorry, it's halachically day, excuse me, but from Zman, from a Kriyat Shema perspective, already, because the sun has set already, it's already considered Zman Shechiva. People are going to sleep, and therefore, Ramir says, you can already read Kriyat Shema at that time. Okay, so that's, it's really, again, as an excuse to talk about the Rabbeinu Tam in the Gra, in order to understand this one line, so, you know, maybe you don't even have to understand their machlokas, but you have to know Rameir, Rabbi Yosei, and Rabbi Huda's machlokas as to when Bein HaShemashos actually is. Okay. Now the Gemara, on the top of Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, asks a very straightforward question. Kasha the Rabbi Meir ad the Rabbi Meir. We, the Braisa we just read with the five opinions, says that Rabbi Meir believes that the time that you can read Kriyat Shema is the time that the Kohanim are nichnasim lecho litbal mitumasan, which we say is during the Bein HaShemashos of Rabbi Yehuda, which Rabbi Meir holds is, like Rabbi Yosei, is still day. But if you remember, if you go back early on Daf Beis Amud Beis, there was a different time given, which is that b'shosh b'nei adam nichnasim lecho piton be'arve shabbosos, from the time that people, regular people, come to eat their food on Erev Shabbos. And here, so those are two different times. Now, one might have considered the possibility, one could consider the possibility that maybe those two times are the same time. Maybe the time that people come to people, the Kohanim Tovel, to become Tahar, and the time people start eating or enter to eat on Erev Shabbos, maybe that's the same time. So Tosus already points out that if you were to level those two times, you would create an overlap in the brice of the five opinions. You just look at the beginning of the top Tosas on Gimel Amud Aleph. Kasha de Rabbi Meir de Ram, Edolomotzi lemeimar, that Bishosh bene Adam nechnasim, Vikohain, the Kohanim, Tovlam, Lechomitrumasan, Chad Shi'ur. You can't say that those two things are two descriptions of the same time. The Imkain, Rabbi Meir, Hain Rabachai, Lefi Perish Rashi. The way Rashi explained the brice, Rabbi Chai's opinion, Mishash Erov B'nei Adam Nechnasim Lohosev, is on Erev Shabbos. So if you explain that way, and then maybe that's why Rashi said that, you cannot say that Rabbi Meir's two times are actually one and the same. Because if you were to say that Rabbi Meir's time of Mishash B'nei Adam Nechnasim Lecho B'Erev Shabbos is the same as Mishash HaKohanim Tovim Lecho B'Trumasan, then these are two brises, that might work, but now it turns out Rabbi Chai and Ramir in our brise of the five say the exact same thing, and that can't be, because they obviously have to have a different opinion. Okay, now the Gemara asks another kasha. What did the brises say about Rabbi Eliezer's opinion? When does Rabbi Eliezer say that you can read Kriyat Shema? So in the Braisa of the five, Rabbi Eliezer was the first opinion, and he said that Mishah Shekidesh Hayom Ba'arve Shabbosos, which really means it's still a little bit day, because you have to add on just at least a little bit. And what does Rabbi Eliezer say in the Mishnah?
Mora Mishah.
No, that's the end. What does he say for the beginning? Me'emas I korin eshmar ba'arvin. Yishar shakohanim nechnasim lachal b'trumasan. Ad sof ha'shmur rishon ha'divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So I probably mentioned when we first read the Mishnah, what does divrei Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah refer to? In other words, the statement is, me'emas I korin eshmar ba'arvin. When do we read Kriyat Shema at night? Mishar shakohanim nechnasim lachal b'trumasan. From the time the kohanim entered the Yitruma, Ad sofa shema rishona, until the end of the first watch. Now, divrei Rabbi Eliezer, and what do the Chachamim say? They say, ad chatzos. Now, when is the beginning time for the Chachamim? presumably Mishasha. In other words, the line Mishasha Kohanim Nechasan Lacha B'Trumasam at a minimum would appear to be the opinion of everybody in the Mishnah. The fight between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim and Rabbi Gamliel is the end time, right? But the opening part is Me'emas Haikar Shemar Ba'Avrin, from until. Chachamim say until, Rabbi Gamliel says until. So the Gemara's question is assuming that everybody in the Mishnah agrees that it's Mishasha Kohanim Nechnas Lacha B'Trumasan, and they're only arguing about the end time. So the Gemara says, and yet Rabbi Eliezer in the Braisa says, Mishasha Kidesh Hayom Ba'Arve Shabbosos, which is earlier. So the Gemara says, Kasha the Rabbi Eliezer to Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara, I don't know if I read the answer for Rabbi Meir, the answer for Rabbi Meir for the contradiction was Trei Tanoi Avlid Rabbi Meir. There were two opinions of what Rabbi Meir said. Sometimes, one Tana said, Rabbi Meir said X, one Tana said, Rabbi Meir said Y. And the same thing the Gemara says, Trei Tanoi Avlid Rabbi Eliezer, but, V'iboy Yisema, but it's also possible, Resha Lav Rabbi Eliezer, that the opening part is not Rabbi Eliezer. If you take a look in Rashi, Rashi says Lav Rabbi Eliezer, V'hodek Katani Div Rabbi Eliezer, Asof Hazman Koi. It's only going on ad, the second half of that opening statement. De Ka'amar Ad Sof Hashmur Rishona Upligi Rabbanan Lav Amri Ad Chatzos. And Rashi now explains the machlokas. Rabbi Meir, what is Rabbi Meir's, Rabbi Eliezer, what's Rabbi machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim? Rabbi Eliezer darish b'shach b'chaz man haschol ha-shchivash ben adam hochem lishkav zeh kodem v'zeh me'uchar. V'rabbanan darshi kol zman shchiva t'haynu kol ha-layla. Rabbi Eliezer's position is that it's only when people are going to sleep initially, whereas the Chachamim's position, Rabbi Gamliel's position, as long as people are sleeping. Okay, but for the purposes of our Mishnah, it means that the opening line doesn't have to be Rabbi Eliezer. Now, that is not an insignificant point for the following reason. I'm not going to read it inside, but the Rif, you know, we spent a lot of time looking over the last 2 weeks ago, for a couple of weeks, reading Tosfos and the Rush and the other Mishonim. When is really Zman Kriya Shema? Because what is the Minag? When do people do it in Shul, etc.? The Rif isn't bothered by any of this. The Rif, apparently in North Africa, it seems, the practice was, they read Kriya Shema and they were supposed to. The Rif is just interested in proving that the opinion of Mishasha Kohanim Nechnasim Lacha B'Trumasim, in fact, is the opinion we paskin like, because you have a whole series of opinions in the Gemara. You have at least five, maybe more opinions in the Gemara, when the beginning of Zman Kriya Shema is. Now, why would you not think to paskin like the Mishnah? The answer is because you might say that whose opinion is it, Mishasha Kohanim Nechnasim Lacha B'Trumasim? You might have said that it's only Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. The Chachamim and the Gamliel don't explicitly say anything in the Mishnah about what the start time is. They only talk about the finish time. So the conclusion of our Gemara is that it might be that the opening line, Mishasha Kohanim Nechnasim Lacha B'Trumasan, is not even Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. It's not that it's everybody's opinion. It's not Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. It might only be the Chachamim's opinion. That's what the Gemara, by the Gemara trying to say that you assume that both parts belong to Rabbi Eliezer, and you're wrong, maybe it's only at Sof HaShemur Rishona, so the Gemara in its conclusion raises the possibility that the first part of the Mishnah is only the Chachamim and maybe Rabbi Gamliel. Now, what was the first answer of the Gemara when the Gemara said there really was a contradiction between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Eliezer? So the answer was, it's a machlokas what Rabbi Eliezer said. That was assuming that the opening words, Mishashacham, do belong to Rabbi Eliezer. Now, within that reading, it's possible to say that that's only Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. In other words, that the first two things are both unique to Rabbi Eliezer Shita. For some reason, both the start time and the end time. But for some reason, the Mishnah didn't list for Chacham and Rabbi Gamliel what they hold. But we know that there are five other opinions in the Gemara, and maybe they hold one of those opinions. So the Rif goes through quite a bit of effort, because the Rif usually doesn't add much to the Gemara, to try to demonstrate no. Clearly, it's absolutely clear that the Chacham and Rabbi Gamliel agree with the start time in the Mishnah. And the only question is, does Rabbi Eliezer agree with the start time? But was it given? In effect, the way the Gemara is sort of saying this anyway, but I think the Rif is putting the overemphasis on it. The way you have to read the Mishnah is the following. Period. Big period. Big stop. Next line. But you really notice, again, the second approach of the Gemara does already put it in those terms, but the Rif thinks that it's a given. Is it given that even the first teretz is going to assume that you put a big stop there? The only question is, why would you assume that Rabbi Eliezer doesn't agree with that? Because if Rabbi Eliezer didn't agree why did he say something? Right? So that would be why you would be inclined. But either way, it's clear that he thinks that Mishasha Kohanim Chnasam L'Trumasan is at least Divrei Chachamim and Rabban Gamliel, right? Whether it's Rabbi Eliezer also, those are the two answers in the Gemara. Okay, and that's why the Rif says, and again, the Rambam and the Rif obviously passed in that way, that Zman Kriya Shema is Mishasha Kohanim Chnasam L'Trumasan, and so probably did Rashi, only Rabbeinu Tam and school different from that. Okay, fine. Now the Gemara goes to Rabbi Eliezer's statement on the in the Mishnah, Ad Sofa Ashmura Arishona. So the Gemara asked the following question. My Kosavar Rabbi Eliezer. Now, why does he say Ad Sofa Ashmura Arishona? I Kosavar Shalosh Mishmeros Hava Halayla. If he believes that the night is divided up into three watches, Lema at Arba Shos. Why did he say at Sofa Shmurishona? That's not a helpful gauge. Why don't you just tell us? I told that 4 hours. The Ikasava Arba Mishmar Sava Laila. If he assumes that the night is four Mishmaras, Lema at Shalosh Shos. He should have said up until 3 hours of the night. So the Gemara says, La Olam Kasavar Shalosh Mishmaras Have Laila. And I think it's going to become clear in a Brisa later. So he holds up to three Mishmaras. What he's teaching us is that just as there are there are mishmaros, the watches are broken up in heaven, I would say just as they are broken up on earth as well. And the Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Shalosh Mishmaros Hava Halayla. The night is three watches. Ve'al kol mishmar o mishmar yoshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'shoei ka'ari. God, on each mishmar, kivayachal, roars like a lion. Shenemar, Hashem, mimarom yishag, it's probably Amos, is that who this is from? Yirmiyahu. Sha'og yish'ah, he roars once, the simple reading is, it's going to say the root sha'ag three times. Umimon kadsho yitain kalo, sha'og yish'ag al navehu. He will roar over his dwelling place, over the Beis HaMikdash, which is, has been, or will be destroyed. So just as there are mishmaros, in heaven and earth, well, it's not clear which way you go. So there are mishmaros in both. Correct. You don't. But his point of telling you Sofa Shmura Rishona, is that you should realize that these ashmuras, I would say, correspond to what's going on in heaven. Presumably, he has a reason why. You know, he wants it to be metaphysically at Sofa Shmura Rishona.
Practically, don't you need to know how many hours that is?
So Rabbi Eliezer, it doesn't in the Mishnah, but in the Braisa, he says that the Shalosh Mishmaras Havalayla. So you're right, you don't know from the Mishnah. So what you lose is the practical detail. What you gain is the metaphysical detail.
And that God is crying out throughout the Mishmar, at the end of the Mishnah?
It sounds, the Gemara's going to talk about that in a second. So, my kachashiv, the Gemara says, then the Gemara says, svesiman ladavar, if you want to know when each Mishmar is, and the Gemara will talk about in a moment which part of the Mishmar we're speaking about, the siman ladavar is that Mishmar Rishona Hamor Noer, that's when the donkeys bray, shniya klavim tzoakim, the dogs bark, and shlishis tinok yonek mishteimo, the Isha Misaperes Imbaila. So that's when a young child wakes up to nurse, and that's when, you know, a husband and wife will be conversing. So now the Gemara asks a question. Before we actually, I'll wait till the end to talk about the comment of Rav Haigon. So my kachash of Rabbi Eliezer, what is Rabbi Eliezer talking about? Meaning, which part of the Mishmar is he identifying? You have three choices, really. The obvious choices are beginning or end. Theoretically, you could also say the middle. So, my kachashiv, Rabbi Eliezer, itchilas mishmaros kachashiv, if he's telling you a siman for each of the beginnings of the three mishmaros, meaning the beginning of the first mishmar is when a donkey brays, if that is the case, so then Simana Lamali Urtahu. You want to know what the beginning of the first Mishmar is? Forget the donkey brain. That's night. Whenever night starts. Night you can tell easily astronomically. You don't need a simon of the donkey brain. Esof Mishmar is Kohashib. If he's telling you what the end of each Mishmar is, then Sof Mishmar Achoron Alamali. Why do you need to tell us the last one, that Tinok Yonek Mishtei Imo and Isha Misaperis Mbaila? After all, Yimamahu, it's day. You don't need a special simon. So then the Gemara says, Ela, you know what it is? Choshiv Sof Mishmar Rishona. The end of the first Mishmar, that's when the donkey brays. Tchilas Mishmar Achrona, that's when Atinok is Yonek Mishtei Imo and Isha Misaperis Mbaila, the beginning of the last watch. And finally, the Emtza Ista Emtza Isa, the middle of the middle watch. So basically, if we have 12 hours in the night, this is hours 4, 6, and 8. That's what the three simonim are.
Are the mishmaros broken down an equal amount? Does every mishmar the same amount of time?
That's what I think the Gemara assumes. That really sounds as if the Gemara is assuming that right here, when it asks, why, what does he hold, how many mishmaros, and just say 4 hours or 3 hours. And the Gemara also assumes, is going to assume that later in the Agada, I think, on the next Talmud. That we assume the watches were divided up. Obviously, for them to calculate and know exactly, when a Mishmar ended, these Simanim, if they really hold, are somewhat useful because they obviously didn't have watches or clocks or things like that. Okay. Then the Gemara gives another possible answer. No, it could be it's all the end. Why do you need the last one? Just it's day. The answer is Lamikre Kriyashma, Lamandagani Bibayas Afel Valiadasman Kriyashma Amas. Someone who is sleeping, who is lying in a very dark house. Again, I don't know why not, just I guess. Yeah, the truth is, you know what a bias afel means? I think I once touched upon this in a sermon here. A bias afel is a house that has no windows. You can't open the window. The Mishnah in the Gaim says, I think, that bias afel, you're not poschin lo chalonos. So you don't, if somebody thinks they saw a nega in a bias afel, in a dark house, the Kohen, if he can't see it by the natural light coming in, he just doesn't declare a tame. And the Gemara comments, I spoke about this in the context of the bias hamanuka lohei of lonivra, and it was only given literally kabel schar, and the message here was tznius. That if a person keeps something in, then the goyim don't come into his house. That was what I had said then. But a bias of the Gemara talks about Mishnah's ein poschid lo chalonos, which means that doesn't mean to open the windows. It means opening windows for it, creating windows for it. So someone is in a house where they really can't tell, and when ideally the first time your chatchil is supposed to be kriyashma is right when the sun rises, so he might not know the sun has risen. But if Tino Kusionik Mishteimo and his, if he's talking to his wife, I'm not sure. So then, it's time. Leikom velikre. It is time to actually read Kriyashma. Okay. So then the Gemara comments on this. I mentioned Rav Haigon actually says, what's the point in telling us that the Mishmar is Berikia? Like, who cares? That's very nice. But it's useful to know the simon for Sosman Kriyashma for Rabbi Lezer. It's also nice to know the beginning of the end of the last Hashemura because someone who's sleeping in a bayis afel knows that it's Man Kriyashma. But what is the point of Mishmaros Berakia? So the Rishon and the Rashba and the Ritva quote of Haigon, who says that those are times propitious times. Those are good times for a person to engage in tachanunim. For the suffering in the world, because that's a time apparently when there's a greater receptivity in heaven. And the Gemara comments, and I think it's related to the following line, which is Amar of Yitzchak bar Shmuel Mishmei the Rav Gimel Mishmaros Hava Halayla. Av'al Ko Mishmar Mishra Yoshev HaKadosh Baruch B'Shoei Kari V'Omer Oy Lebanim Shavanoseim Hechrafti Es Besi V'Sarafti Seichali V'Iglesun Bein Umas HaOlam. He says, woe to the children whose, because of their sins, I've destroyed my own house and I've burnt my hechal and I've exiled them amongst the nations. So this is actually a very powerful Gemara. The idea that we speak about suffering, and exile is a time of Hester Panim, when God has turned his back upon the Jewish people, when we certainly suffered much. But the message that the Gemara, the Agada, is conveying here is that even in a time when the Jewish people have been exiled, so in effect, HaKadosh Baruch Hu misses us. We still have a relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam, even in times of suffering. I mean, it's very interesting. I saw a beautiful, Medrash Rabbah on yesterday's Parsha, where it says, V'asu li mikdash. So the question is, why is the mikdash, why does God need the mikdash? So the Medrash gives a mashal that you had a king who had a bas yechida, he had only a single daughter, and eventually, you know, came time to marry her off, and some king came from a foreign land, wanted to marry her, so he agreed to marry her. But he said to the fellow, do me a favor, he said to the king, listen, said to not let her you marry her, so I can't do that, I can't ask for that. And I can't also ask you not to take her back to your land, because that's what you do. But I ask you the following. Wherever you go, wherever you live, please make a small anteroom, a small ketone that I can live in. So this way, I don't have to be far away from my daughter. And the mashal of the Medrash is HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Klal Yisrael the Torah, but the Torah is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Bas Yechida. But he gave it to Klal Yisrael, and therefore, the Torah has left heaven, it has come to earth, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked that wherever we go, even when we're traveling in the Midbar, forget when we have we're in Makom Menuchah or Beis HaMikdash, when we're traveling in the Midbar, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, at least make a Mishkan so I can come dwell amongst you, because I miss my daughter, I miss the Torah. And that's a very, very powerful statement about the relationship between the Ribono Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael and the Torah. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends us away, so that's also a painful experience. Not only a painful experience for him, he's roaring like a lion. It's a painful experience. It's for us, it's a painful experience for him as well. Yes. Okay. So now, the Gemara continues. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yosei, Pama achas hayisi mehalech bederech. Once I was traveling on a journey, v'nichnasti l'churva achas mechurvos Yerushalayim lisbalo. I entered one of the ruins, one of the ruined houses in Jerusalem, in order to pray. I imagine it's from this Gemara that they took the term, the Churva Synagogue. That would be my guess. And so I entered to pray there. Ba Eliyahu zachur latov, v'shamar li ala Pesach. Eliyahu, a blessed mention, so he didn't protect, actually. He came, and v'shamar li, Rashi points out, somebody, you look in the parentheses in the Gemara, you see what it says in the Gemara? V'himtinli. That was somebody's translation of shamar. So Rashi explains, v'shamar, v'himtin, kimo lo yomar adam l'chaveiro, shmar li b'tzadav azar plonis, right? You're not supposed to mention the name of the Zara, so you don't say, wait for me by the church of the whatever, right? The word is shmorli. It doesn't mean to guard, it means to wait. So Rashi says that's what the word means here. V'chein v'aviv shamar es hadavar, shomer emunim, it means to wait. Yaakov didn't watch the matter, but rather he waited to see what would happen with Yosef's dreams. So somebody, recognizing the shamar li ala Pesach, he has incorporated Rashi's parish or tried to stick it into the words of the Gemara. So the Shamar Li Ala Pesach, Eliyahu and Avi waited for me there, Acha Siyamti Tfilasi. He waited for me while I finished my tefillah. Amar Li Shalom Alecha Rebbe. So Eliyahu and Avi, and you, I'm sure somebody could write an entire, either a dissertation or a Sefer Musar based upon all the stories in the Gemara that Eliyahu and Avi appears in.
He appears in liturgy and whatever.
What's that?
And where he appears in liturgy.
Correct, correct. In the Gemara's worldview, you know, perhaps one of very, very powerful Agada, there are a couple of places, but one, I think it's in the Yerushalmi. So there's a machlokes, Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. If enemies surround the city, or brigands surround the city, and they say, give us one of you and we'll kill him, otherwise we'll kill all of you. So the Mishnah, it's in the Brele Brisa, and the Yerushalmi says that better that they let them kill all of them and not hand over one nefesh Mi'Yisrael. But they say that if he was, if im yichudu lahem echad k'sheva ben Bichri, if they designated one person, like the story of Sheva ben Bichri at the end of Sefer Shmuel, when Sheva ben Bichri launched a rebellion against David after he came back from the Avshalom rebellion, And the David sent Yoav eventually, who surrounded the city, and they basically tossed Shiva ben Bichri's head out to Yoav to, so that he went destroy the city, and that was the end of it. So the Yushalmi says that if they were miyached one individual like Shiva ben Bichri, then you can give him. So there's a machlokas, Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan, whether that means, does he have to be Chayav Misa like Shiva ben Bichri, who was married by Malchus, or is it enough that they pick one person? Once they designate the person, then, since they're gonna kill everybody, it's no worse. It's one thing for you to pick the person to kill, but once they pick the person, it's okay. So whichever daya. So then there's a story that happened with one of the Amoraim, and he followed the opinion of whichever opinion he followed that under certain circumstances you could hand one over. And Eliyahu HaNavi no longer appeared to him. So he fasted a lot, I think, the story goes, and finally Eliyahu appeared to him. And he said, why not? So Rabbi Elazar says, Eliyahu HaNavi, you hand over the person. He says, V'lav Mishnah Niyosa? Didn't I actually perform, I did what the halacha, he said, V'mishnas chasidim, Eliyahu HaNavi says, and that's a mishnas chasidim? Yeah, technically speaking it was permitted, but you shouldn't have done that. That's not what someone who's truly pious does. And if you're not truly pious, you don't merit, my company. The Gemara in Ksubas has a totally unrelated, but Eliyahu HaNavi talks about two Amoraim, one of whom, when he had the help, the household help, so before, if the help would be serving the meal, so before, the Gemara says that you're not allowed to serve the meal if the household help hasn't eaten, and they have to sit there, stand there serving the food, and they're hungry. That's not okay. So one Amora used to feed them before, he would give them from one dish so they were sated. And the other Amora was makbid to give them from each of the kinds of foods that would be served some, so they wouldn't in any way feel even deprived. Not that they would be hungry, they wouldn't feel psychologically deprived that they there was a food, kind of food that they hadn't been able to taste. And the Gemara says, Mar ishto Eliyahu badei, Mar lo ishto Eliyahu badei. One of them, Eliyahu HaNavi, used to come and have a chavrusa with. The other one, he didn't have a chavrusa with because the other one, the Gemara is in Ksubos, I think it's in the sixth parak. So again, it's Eliyahu HaNavi's appearance, generally speaking, in the Gemara, unless he's coming to punish someone, generally speaking, is a comment about the chasidut of an individual involved. Okay. So anyway, so Eliyahu HaNavi waited for him, and he says, when he sees him, Shalom Alecha Rebbe. So Vamar Tila, Rabbi Yossi says, I said to him, Shalom Alecha Rebbe Umori. Ve'amar li, b'ni, mipnei ma, nichnasta l'chur vazo. Why did you enter this room? Amarti lo lehispala. I want to daven. And presumably he entered there because he didn't want people to disturb him. The Amar li, and he said to me, Hayalah lespala baderech. You should have davened on the road. Because apparently it's dangerous entering the churva. The Amarti lo, misyare hayisi shema yafsikubi over idrachim. Probably yafsikubi. I'm afraid they would interrupt me. The Amar li, he said to me, Hayalah lespala tfila kitzara. You should have davened a tefillah katzara. We'll talk about what that is in a moment. I learned three things from this story with him. You're not supposed to enter a churva. The Gemara later will talk about why, and there are different reasons that imply different circumstances. That it's okay to be mispal baderach. And then, that you're going to daven baderach in a place where you might be interrupted, so you should daven a tefillah katzara. Okay. Then, one more piece to the story. V'amar li bini, makol shamata b'chur vazo. What voice did you hear anything when you were daffing there? V'amar tilo shamati baskol, I heard a heavenly voice, shemina hemes kayona. It was, I don't know, cooing, could be moaning in some ways like a dove. The omeres, the dove symbolizes Klal Yisrael. The omeres, oy levonim shavavanoseihem hecharavti espesi, v'saravti esecholi, v'higlesim levein ha'umos. So he heard the same thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says on the Mishmaros, that was the voice that he heard. The amar li, and Eliyahu said to me, chayecha v'chayi roshcha, I swear to you, Lo shazo bavaro meriskach, not just when you were there davening, ela bechol shol yom v'yom, shalosh pa'amim omeriskach, three times a day. Velozo bavad, ela b'shoshe Yisrael nechrasim levate knesios, ulevate midrashos, ve'onim yeheshme hagadol mivorach. We'll talk about that phrase in a moment. You recognize it with the substitute of one word. Yeheshmei Hagadol Mivarach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Menanea Berosho, God sort of nods with his head, Va'omer, Ashrei HaMelech Shemekalsin Oso Beveso Kach. Well, how fortunate is the king in whose house they praise him such? Malo la'av, oi to the father sheheglas banav, that who exiled his own children, for oi lo hem lebanim shegalum el shulchan avihim. So you see that here already God's complaint has shifted. It's not just woe to us who have sinned, but it's woe to himself for having, woe to the father who exiled his children. So again, this reinforces that this obviously one of the questions you'll ask just from a, simple textual question is, what is this story doing here? It's about Rabbi Yosef's tefillah. The answer is, it's association. Because the previous Brisa / Amora, who spoke about God's roaring and his statement of, Oila Labanov, you know, Oila Labanov Shagolum al Shulchan Avihim, etc., or whatever it was. So because that appears in this story as well, the Gemara attaches Rabbi Yosef here. And then, you know, this is one of the things that we will see in the Agada. We have a lot of Agada on this Perek, which I want to both talk about the substance of the Agada. That's just an opportunity missed. But also, you do have to at least, you might want to sometimes ask, well, what is the connection between them? Yes.
This seems, had he not been in the Purva, it doesn't sound like you would have heard the Shina. So there was a positive of being in the Purva. Because he asked him, what voice did you
correct, speak? Correct. In other words, one might say the following, not everybody hears the voice. Not everybody
and
hears the voice.
It seems like it's because he was in the Purva.
Well, okay, because, yes, but it was in a place, yes, I think that's number one, correct. Number two, he's in a place where not everybody else is. Right, everybody on the derech, you're correct. Your inference is a very good observation. On the derech, he might not have heard the voice, but the derech is where everybody else is. I would want to just preface two comments here, if you'll indulge me. I'm just talking about the Agada in general, and I think that's both the Agada and this particular Agada. I think that one of the great challenges in our community. I had a very interesting Shabbos guest, who I would say is I'll just for shorthand description, a little bit of a neo chassid, a very interesting fellow. And I didn't need him to tell me this, is that we have, one of the great challenges that our community faces is the lack of an emotional spiritual component to our Judaism. The over-intellectualization. In Litvisha communities, it's generally a problem, but it's made worse. I think it's worse in our community because at least in yeshivish communities, there is more, again, it's still a problem, but there's more insularity. I think that part of the disease can be recognized across the board, not just in our community, as to what happens in most traditional yeshivas when you get to Agada. And the answer is, you skip it. I believe that the Agada might be more important than Halacha, and I don't say that as being a Reform rabbi. I believe that the Halacha, we know, not always we know a lot of what the Halacha is, but just having Halacha gives a kind of lifeless existence. Just having, when Talmud Torah is just an intellectual experience, it's a lifeless existence. And it should not surprise us, should not surprise people when their children find no interest in it in a world that maybe doesn't offer any better outside, but they're searching for meaning. And if you want to find meaning for most human beings, that meaning will be found in the Agada. The second piece, which I think is a tragedy, and these, what's that? The second piece, which this Agada really particularly drives home, is that I would say, this is probably true in the modern Orthodox community. I don't think this is true in the yeshiva world. And I say that because I grew up, at least through sixth grade, in such an environment, at least in a school, which was much more of that, is that we don't talk about God in our community. God is some kind of a dirty word. There's a Gemara, I think, in the Darim, which commented on the Pasuk, and I think it's Yirmiyahu, Va'osi azavu v'sarasi lo shamaru. So the Gemara says on that, Yirmiyahu said, they abandoned me and they didn't observe my Torah. And the Gemara says, Halavai, osi azavu v'sarasi shamaru. If only they had abandoned me, but they followed my Torah. Now, I think if you look in the Mefarshim there, what that means is that through keeping of the Torah eventually, you then come to reconnect with God as well. As long as you're keeping the Torah. But some people seem to have misunderstood that and thought, oh, that's the way it should be. Halavai. Storasi shamaru, but rosi azava, right? We don't talk about God. And that's a terrible thing. God doesn't have to be this old man sitting on a throne with a long beard giving a candy to children. But there is a deep loss when we don't ourselves talk about, we don't think about for ourselves, and we don't teach our children about trying to have a relationship with Ribbono Shel Olam.
Right. In the education, it says, we're teaching our children to do this, 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 because it will eventually lead to the connection.
I think that, unfortunately, we can see how often it doesn't. But I think the Gemara here speaks powerfully between, and the Medrash that I cited from Truma as well, of the Kivayach HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to have a relationship with us. That means that we're supposed to want to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That can come in many different forms for different kinds of people. There may be some people, you know, for whom Talmud Torah is the avenue, and that's how they come to know God. And in a certain way, the only way to know God in some way is through His Torah. Not necessarily in the Halacha, but through His Torah. There are some people for whom Tefillah can be a profound spiritual experience. But as anybody has stepped into any yeshiva high school and stepped into most of our shuls most of the time, we understand that our tefillah also somehow lacks a certain kind of passion and intensity. You know, in some shuls, at least maybe Yom Narai, and you get something closer to it. And it can come in other forms as well, just in a daily awareness. The Shulchan Aruch's opening passage. So this is the book of Halacha, right? That's what the Shulchan Aruch is. The Shulchan Aruch is not a book of Agada, but the opening words of the Shulchan Aruch is that the central way of being as a Jew is Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Samed. It means everything that you do in life, whether it's your business, whether it's your interaction with family, friends, community, not just things that are Kodesh, are done with an awareness of the presence of the Ribono Shalom. And I don't think that we foster that for ourselves and for our children in our schools. And I think that is, forgetting about what its consequences are and whether that leads to attrition, it's bad in its own right. Right? That's what it means to be an Eved Hashem, is to have an awareness and have a connection and a relationship with Ribono Shalom. So, what's that? I would say machshava, but yeah. So anyway, I think that Chazal's machshava, and if you want to call it philosophy or theology, is contained in the Agadah. The morality, yeah, all of that is in the Agadah. And again, you have to know how to read Agadah. You can still be a rationalist in the Gaonic and Maimonidean mold, and quite the contrary, that's the way you want to be, because in order to understand what Chazal are trying to teach us, theologically, philosophically, spiritually, so you have to look for it. And you're not gonna, Kriya Shema is a central mitzvah, it's a powerful mitzvah, and it certainly aims towards spirituality, but it's not gonna be necessarily in, okay, which is the time for Kriya Shema? You know, is it Seis and how many stars and so on? And I'm not minimizing that importance, because that's what I do. Is the study, that's my primary occupation, is the study of Halacha. But nonetheless, without the Agada, it becomes kind of like a lifeless body. Yes, Sam. Yeah.
Having a conversation with God or anyone, you have to be, it may have to say things that you don't like about the party you're conversing with. They sort of hid their complaint against God here by putting that God is complaining about himself. But of course, they didn't hear God complaining about himself. They were complaining about God. How could God do this to his children? But they didn't dare put it that way. So they said, God is the one who's complaining about himself. How could I have been so cruel to do all this?
But I would say the following to you, Sam. It doesn't matter whether or not it's Chazal's projecting onto the Baruch Shalom, or it's their way of presenting a complaint. Right, when you complain about someone,
I don't think the Orthodox community is prepared to hear any. If it's not, you know, you said the Archbold censored Rashbam. They're not prepared to even for a minute to have something that sounds negative because they believe that that's too dangerous. They don't believe that if you have a genuine conversation, if there's any negative in the conversation, it means you're getting a divorce already.
You can have a
husband and wife throw brickbats at each other and still stay married. But they don't believe it. They believe if you say one bad word against God, the whole relationship is...
So let me just say the following. I'm going to speak to only for our community. I won't speak to another community. In the Jewish tradition, complaining about God and complaining to God certainly has a long standing history. That's what we do when we do keynotes on Tisha B'Av. But I want to say the following. I would say it correct in one way. When a person is complaining about God, it means they have a relationship with God. The difference I think about, I won't say the names, they've come up in conversation on previous occasions, two people who are my contemporaries, one who I believe is an atheist, a very prominent legal scholar, who my sense is from everything that I know never had a relationship with God. There was another fellow who went with me to the same yeshiva as I went through, pretty much except for one grade he switched earlier, from K to 12. And he's an author who's written some interesting kinds of books, and he has a warped relationship with God. But he has a relationship with God. I don't think he's observant, but the fact is he has a relationship with God, and I think that's a step up. So you can complain, but it means you have a relationship. Okay. So anyway, that's the story here with Rabbi Yosef. From the sublime to the more mundane in terms of looking at this, there's a very interesting one of the things that Gemara obviously emerged
about, you know, even intellectually, there is, you know, you're making it sound that people can't have emotional satisfaction from intellectual understanding.
I said for some people, that's the way they connect to God.
If you're in a classroom, and you know, when you hop something, your face lights up, and if a child his face lights up, it's your job, to make sure you should not let the child leave the room or after the class. Then you should make sure his face lights up in understanding for what you're teaching. Otherwise, you're not doing your job. Otherwise, you've actually turned them off because you've actually given them a negative experience. You haven't reached the point where if every child in your class's face is not lit up by what you're teaching, then you have failed.
I'm not going to argue with you. Okay.
Every child in the class should have an experience of his face lining up in understanding. This is not for me. If he says this is not for me, that'd be being good.
Okay. Okay, let's come back to this issue I want to talk about. Yehishmei Rabba, obviously, is a very powerful tefillah, obviously. If that's the time when the Jewish people speak about God and they say, Yeheshmei Rabba Mevarach, clearly from the comment that Elio makes to Rabbi Yosef, that's a powerful tefillah. Question is, what does it mean? I know. The question is, what does it mean? So Tosfos here quotes something very interesting. Va'ona, the bottom Tosfos, we also have to talk about tefillah tzaras, we'll come back to that. But Va'onim Yeheshmei Hagada Mevarach. Mikan yesh listor masha pirish b'machzor vitri. I think machzor vitri is from Rashi's Talmidim. They wanted to explain that Yeheshmei Rabba shezot tefila she'anu mispalalim sheyimale shemau. The words mean the following. Yeheshmei, let his name be Rabba. So the machzor vitri wants to say that's the end. The semicolon is there. Meaning, let his name become greater, become fuller. Because what that means is, kidichsiv, at the end of Parshas Beshalach, ki yod al keiska, shelo yehe shemo shalem v'kiso shalem ad sheyim chazar shalem alek. In other words, Rashi quotes this from Chazal at the end of Parshas Beshalach, that God, why does God, when he swears that he's going to wipe out Amalek, it says, ki yod al keiska. Why is it not case yud kei vav kei? Why is it only yud kei? Because the name is not shalem until, and it's case. Why is it case not kisei? The answer is because God's name will not be complete until he's wiped this evil out of the world. So the Machzor Vitri wants to read, upei rusho kach, yehei shmei, shem ka, take the Aramaic word, shemei nudhei, may that name be rabba, may it become bigger, meaning become larger. Klomar sh'anu mispalim, sheyehei shemo, gadol v'shalem, v'shalem, semicolon. And then, umivorach li'olam, have a tefillah acheres, klomar, umivorach la'olam haba. So the Machzor Vitri wanted to read, yehei shmei rabba, kama. And then, umivorach li'olam, and his name should be blessed also forever. So Tosa says, that can't be. He says, v'zelo nire, midaka amar hecha, yehei shmei, Hagadol Mivorach. Now, in the Hebrew, and this is obviously the same tefillah, Rav in Aramaic is Gadol in Hebrew. So once you say Yeheshmei Hagadol Mivorach, if the Machzor Vitri were correct, it would have been Yeheshmei Gadol. The Heayidia is the relative clause here. May his name, which is great, be Mivorach Adolam. So he says, that midikamar hacha Yeheshmei Hagadol Mivorach mashma de tefillah achasi. It's all one tefillah that we're asking that God's name, which is great, not that it become great, God's name, which is great, should be Mivorach Le'olam, whatever that means exactly. The Eino wrote to Lomar, Shehe Shemei Gadol V'Shalem, Eli He Shemei Shemo HaGadol Mivorach. That was one observation Tosfos makes, he thinks is wrong. Now the truth is, from a purely Aramaic perspective also, the Machzor Vitri is wrong, which may undermine Tosfos' Raya. What does the word Rabbah mean? This is just a comment. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this about Aramaic. What's that? Well, no, it means more than that. So what does the word Av mean in Aramaic? Not a trick question. Father. What is Abba?
the predecessor?
The Aleph at the end of an Aramaic word, Bavli Aramaic is bad about this. It uses it almost all the time. But other dialects of Aramaic, the Aleph at the end in Aramaic is the Hey at the beginning of the word in Hebrew. The reason when you call your father, if you refer to your father or mother as Abba or Ima, you are really saying the father. Because when I say the father, it means my father. In fact, there's an expression I always point out in the Gemara. Rabbi Yosei is occasionally quoted as saying, Abba Chalafta said. Abba Chalafta means the father, Chalafta said. The father, Rabbi Yosei is Rabbi Yosei Bar Chalafta. When he says Abba Chalafta, he's saying, my father, Chalafta said, but starting with the father. So Rabbah already means Hagadol. If it had been an Aramaic verb, Yeheshmeh, it should have been Rav. He wouldn't have had an Aleph at the end. So even without going to the Hebrew, Tosis is pointing out that when you have, the Gemara is here a translation. I mean, one's a translation of the other. But Hagadol and Rabbah with the Aleph at the end are the exact same thing. Yeah, so I think Tosis is still fundamentally correct. It's a strained reading on the Machzor Vitri's part. But the only thing to be aware of is that in the Bavli, they often use the Aleph at the end, even though there's no Hey. Yeah, they make it definite, even though it's not. It's very, very, very common. When you study Targum Onkelos, or you study Yerushalmi, or any other dialects in Aramaic, so then usually it's pretty consistent that without the Aleph, it is indefinite. With the Aleph, it is definite. It has the Vel on the front. So that was point number one Tosis made. Point number two Tosis made, is that people, why do we say Aramaic in Kaddish? Why do we say Kaddish in Aramaic? It would probably be a lot easier for people. I tell you for sure, the Kaddish on the Siyam. For most people, it would be a whole lot easier if we were translating to Hebrew. Reading a Ksuba wouldn't be an art, you know, if you didn't have to go back and forth between Hebrew and Aramaic, right? So the only good thing about being Aramaic is that when someone reads a Ksuba, and even if they happen to have a long beard and a hat, and you know that they don't know what they're talking about because they don't know where to put the punctuation, so you figure it out, it doesn't matter what color, how big the hat is or how long the beard is. There are some people who know what they're reading of all kinds, and some people of all kinds who don't know what they're reading.
So that the
customer
doesn't know what he's getting into.
It's a boring
contract. It's a little more specific than the Tanaim after where Moshe, you know, gutted the Tanaim. It's not that, you know, extensive. And today, at least the amount of money being promised isn't that much, you know. So, okay. You know, as I like to say, my favorite misreading, which might be, you know, a Freudian slip for some people, it says in the Ksuba, Vana Eflach, Va Okir, Va Ezon, Va Farnes. So Eflach means to serve. He promises to serve his wife. But sometimes I've heard people read it Afalach, which is a pa'el, which in Aramaic would mean to enslave. So that may, just switching the binyan there, you're going from a kal to a pl in the equivalent in Aramaic, that can really do a number on it. What's that? You know, everything you say is being recorded, just so you know. All right. That's the whole point. The question is why is the Kaddish in Aramaic? So apparently, in the Velt says the following. There's a Gemara in Shabbos that says that a person should not be shalal tzrachav belashon arami. The Gemara in the first parak in Shabbos that you're not supposed to speak, you're not supposed to make your bakashas from God in Lashon Arami, because the Malachi, Shol Tzracha B'Lashon Arami, Ein Malachi HaShares Nizkakimlo. The Malachi HaShares will not transport that tefillah to God. So that, theologically, there's something of a problem in the Gemara. There's a passage in the Raivin that's been damned talks about this. But the Gemara seems to speak negatively of being mispalel in Lashon Arami. So one tradition of understanding is the Malachi HaShares don't understand Lashon Arami. They don't understand Aramaic, which is interesting. That may be a polemic against Aramaic in general. There's a very interesting Gemara. It's more than one place in Bava Kamma in the 7th or 8th Perek where Rebbe says, in Eretz Yisrael, why speak Sursi, which is Syriac, Aramaic? Either speak Greek or Hebrew. In Bavel, why speak Aramaic? Either speak Persian or Hebrew, right? Which is kind of interesting. But all Jews spoke most Eretz Yisrael. But it's a polemic against Aramaic. So this may be part of the same thing. But the Olam says the following. Tosa says the Gama Sheomer Ma'olam Lekach Omer Kaddish Belashon Aramis Lefisha Tefila Noah V'Shevach Gadalhu Alkein Nitaken Belashon Tar. It's such a beautiful Tefila Kaddish. It is actually when you think about what it means. That the angels shouldn't understand, but you miskanim banu. They'll be jealous of us. This is Zeno Nira. Firstly, Sharei Kama Tfilos Yafo Shem Belashon Ivri. There are a lot of beautiful tefillos that are in Hebrew. Elanira, Kidamrinan b'sof sota eina ola miskayim ela asidra de kedushta vayehishme rabba devasar agadita. The world exists, continues to exist only because Seder HaKadusha, whatever that is, and Yeheshmei Rabbah after the Agada. The reason why at the end of a Dvar Halacha, before they say Kaddish, someone says Rav Hanani ben Kasha Omer, is because the Kaddish was instituted on teaching Agada, really Musar, sermonic, not on teaching Halacha. So after the Agada, so we add in, even if you just gave a Dvar Halacha, so then you put an Agada at the end so you can say the Kaddish. Of course, I might comment apropos to our previous discussion. Maybe the message in that is that instead of teaching the Dvar Halacha to bring Chamarav, and we need to teach Halacha too, maybe we'd be better off with a good inspirational Dvar Agada, right? Not a partial sermon limited to Shabbos. So anyway, the world stands on the Yeheshmei Rabbah after the Agada. Sheyu Agilim Lomar Kaddish Achar Hadrasha, Visham Hayu Amei Aratzos, Velo Hayu Mevinim Kulam Lashon HaKodesh. The people didn't understand Hebrew. Lachain, Lekach Tiknu Balashon Targum, Shehayu Akol Mevinim, Shehayu Lashonim. That's why they instituted the Kaddish. So everybody, but ironic, deeply ironic today, right? The Kaddish was instituted in Aramaic because everybody would understand it. And today it's obviously the opposite. Now almost nobody understands Aramaic. But okay, that was the reason why. Okay. One last point very briefly about the Tefillah Ketzarah. So Eliyahu told them you should have davened the Tefillah Ketzarah. What is a Tefillah Ketzarah? So this discussion will really come up later in the Masechta and Halacha, but there are two kinds of Tefillah Ketzarahs. The Mishnah is going to talk about a Tefillah Ketzarah, which is not really a Tefillah. It's a one-liner, a two-liner to God, because you're in a place where it's dangerous to daven, you can't wait, and so on. And you're not Yotzei Tefillah with that. You're not Yotzei, your mitzvah, midrabanan of Tefillah with that. And when you get home, you actually have to daven. But there is a second kind of abridged Tefillah, which the Mishnah has a machlokas, whether you should in fact normally daven it, or at least for certain parts of the year, when you don't have additions to add. Apparently you can't add into this Tefillah if you're adding in the middle brachos. You can add the Alav Yavo in, you can add Masha Baruch Mar Geshen, that's not a problem, but what would be the middle brachos, you can't add in for whatever reason. And that is, as Rashi says here, Tefillah Kitzara, Rashi's about 12 lines from the bottom, or 11 lines from where Rashi ends. Tefillah Kitzara Havinenu. Tefillah Havinenu is basically, you say the first three brachos and the last three brachos, and you have one relatively short, it's long for one bracha, in the middle, where each clause, it picks up the theme of one bracha of the middle brachos. So really you're talking about, 12 half sentences, and then you end with Shomea Tefillah. And because of that, so the sometime thought that you're supposed to do that somewhat regularly. But that's not normally our practice. But if you do say Tefillah Havinenu whenever it's appropriate, so under those circumstances, you're Yotzei the Tefillah. When you go home, you don't daven again because you've done a proper Shemoneh Esrei. You sort of had the Gimel Rishonos, Gimel Achronos, and you had the proper stuff in between. So Tosos just points out that normally the term Tefillah Ketzarah in the Mishnah doesn't mean Havinenu. The Tefillah Ketzarah later, in probably the fourth or fifth perek, is really not Havinenu. It's just some, quick one or two thing, two-liner, and you have to daven again. But Tosos says it's clear from context that in this you use Tefillah Ketzarah when you're a Makom Sakana. Rabbi Yossi wasn't in Makom Sakana. So Tosos thinks that Rashi is correct, in fact, that the Tefillah Ketzarah that's referred to here is actually, even though the term is used Tefillah Ketzarah, it really actually means Havinenu. Okay. No, Rabbi Lezer, Elio told him to daven on the derech. There wasn't Makom Sakana. So we're going to see the next Gemara, not next week, but in 2 weeks, God willing, we'll talk, Gemara and I go back to why is one not supposed to enter Churban.
Elio would say you should have davened Tefillah Ketzarah.
What's that?
Where did he learn from the Churban that you
should? No. He said to him. He said, he's explicitly the first wide line in the Gemara. For Amar Li, Hayyala Chalispal, Tefillah Ketzarah.
No,
he says that explicitly.
Okay.
Okay.